Greetings and welcome to another episode of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And we're doing it again because, we're going to do a bunch of these in between seasons of Soundography. It's another You Gotta Listen to This. Last time was Nicole Spagnolo. Prior to that, we had Justin Robert Young. Today, I feel like all those other guests can just, disappear, just dissolve in the background because we have Tom Merritt. No, I'm kidding about those other guests. They are spectacular as well. But Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I am honored to be in the lineage of those illustrious guests of yours.
That's right. And what a great intro, right? One where I compliment you and I step on others to do so, and then I back up, and then the whole thing just gets muddled up in the whole process.
And don't forget Christy. She was our first.
Oh, my God. How could I forget Christy? Shake. Yikes. All right. She was the beta of this show.
Oh, wow. Nice. Good. Brave person, Christy Cates.
No kidding. All right. So the theme of the show, the reason we do this is because we need a break from listening to an entire catalog of an artist. And we just want somebody to tell us, hey, give us one album. Give us one great album that had some sort of effect in your life or some sort of influence, and introduce us to it. And we always ask for something obscure. You excelled in every regard, man. Tell us the album that you chose.
I chose an album by the former lead singer of Glass Eye, Kathy McCarty. She is an Austin musician, and the album was Dead Dog's Eyeball, Songs of Daniel Johnston.
Very good. And holy cow, what a great album. Not only the fact that you were able to introduce me to a cover album that I didn't already have in my library,
which I didn't even think about when I recommended it, that it's technically a cover because it's all songs of Daniel Johnston, right?
It is, yeah. And and man, did I love this. Hammond, I think you, in talking to you about this, you enjoyed it as well?
Oh, yeah. I thoroughly enjoyed this. And what's even a better litmus test is my 13-year-old really enjoyed it, too.
I think there's a good reason for that. I feel like there's a little bit of a They Might Be Giants kind of pedigree in here. Like, maybe not as silly as They Might Be Giants, but as thought-provoking and pop sensibilities without being pop.
And that's the beautiful marriage of Daniel Johnston's lyrics, which are the less whimsical side of They Might Be Giants. It's very similar. But then with Kathy McCarty's pop sensibilities, kind of pulling it more in that direction.
And that's what I was going to say, is that her voice and her arrangements actually pulled whimsy out of these things in spades.
If people don't realize, Daniel Johnston was just a DIY musician with a chord organ who would create cassettes of his music and peddle them around in the Austin area. And local Austin musicians at the time fell in love with him, because even though he was not a great singer and not even that great of a performer musician, his compositions were compelling. His lyrics were very interesting. And so they sort of promoted him, and he was a cult figure in Austin in the late 80s and into the early 90s, to the point when I was going to grad school there, a mural of his Hi, How Are You album was on the side of the record store on campus.
Yeah. And that's a symbol then, now that you see, it's the, Keep Austin Weird symbol that you see all around town. And I had no idea. It's funny. It actually came up during a discussion a few weeks ago with Rodney Anonymous from the Dead Milkmen. We had done a show about the Dead Milkmen. He replied to us on Twitter and said, hey, I'd love to get a chance to talk with you, clear some things up, and tell you what you got wrong, which is a very Rodney Anonymous thing. We came to realize that that's a very Rodney Anonymous thing to say, that wasn't intended in a way to be like, oh, let me tell you what you got wrong.
It's just wanted to set the record straight.
Exactly. And he talked about Daniel Johnston. They actually covered I think Rocket Ship, now that I think about it. They covered a Daniel Johnston song. No, it wasn't Rocket Ship.
It was Rocket Ship.
Oh, yeah. Okay. On one of their albums. And we had talked about that, and it prompted me to go back and look up the original prompted me to go back and look up more about Daniel Johnston, and discovering all this stuff about him. What an amazing musician. Boy, I'm trying to figure out the right way to describe it, because all right, vocals aren't spectacular. The arrangements aren't necessarily always spot on, but you totally nailed it. There is a gem in each of these songs, and it almost feels like an easy thing to say, let's brush off the dust, get the gem, and make a cover album out of it.
Yeah. And I think that's what I loved about what Kathy McCarty did, because she was friends with Daniel. So she didn't do the album, as far as I know, because she wanted to, like, well, let's take these and make them palatable. Mm-hmm. What she wanted to do was get people past their preconceptions and prejudices the minute they heard his production value, the minute they heard his squeaky voice. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are like, well, this must be bad. Yeah. And she wanted to get them over that and say, let me bring you into his world in a way that maybe you will be more acceptable. So then you'll want to go and discover more about him yourself. And honestly, that's what happened with me. I knew of Daniel Johnston. I had never listened to his albums until I heard this one in 1995. I was working at Half Price Books in Austin. This album came out. I popped it on the cassette player at work and was like, these songs are great. And then my friend Kevin Carney, who was in a band called The Wannabes, which I almost recommended because that's another obscure Austin band that I love, was like, you should listen to Daniel Johnston. Like, he's the source material. And it totally opened that whole world for me. So I thank Kathy McCarty for making this album and helping me to discover Daniel Johnston.
Well, yeah, I can underscore that. The same thing happened to me today. I listened to these songs. I picked out the ones that were my favorites, or a few on here that I just liked more than the others. And then I went back and listened to the originals to see what was the material that she was working with. What was the, the raw source that influenced her to do this. And it's amazing. I mean, I don't know if I would have listened with the same ear had I heard the Daniel Johnston versions before the Kathy McCarty versions, but I'm glad I did. I'm glad I discovered those, because hearing the original of Museum of Love makes me appreciate both of them in a way that I wouldn't have appreciated had I heard them in the opposite order.
You've got to see him. It's love. This is right here where he stood when he said those sacred words.
Isn't there a documentary called The Devil and Daniel Johnston that's out there? Okay. Mm-hmm. I've seen that, and it wasn't until today I put the pieces together.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I need to after today. It's like, okay, I want to know more. I want to find out more about this guy, because he's very compelling. I watched a couple of YouTube videos. One of them was the trailer for that movie, and then another one was an interview with him. And he's a very, very compelling person to watch and to hear talk. You can see the brilliance shine through. And unfortunately, there's just these psychological walls that I think are up there kind of blocking a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. But he's still around and he's still making music. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dead Dog's Eyeball is essentially one of a few albums that are the soundtrack of my life in Austin. I listened to this album constantly, mostly on cassette, to be honest, in my car, driving around. But I mean, I can look through the track list and when you throw out a name like you did with Museum of Love, mm-hmm. or Desperate Man Blues, or I'm a Baby in My Universe, Walking the Cow, immediately the song starts playing in my mind. It's that it's that kind of album for me, where it is ingrained. I will never forget it. I love every single song on this. I have have a weird thing where I have a kind of an ongoing playlist of my favorite songs to listen to. Well, not necessarily my favorite songs, but the songs that will always make me smile when I'm driving around. And the one song off of this that has always stayed on it, and I pull songs in and off this list, but I have never lost the song Living Life. It's the fourth track on the album. And it's just the most durable song for me ever, because since 95, I've been listening to that song constantly, and I never get tired of it.
And everything's all right. Living, 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 living life. Oh, hope for the hopeless. I'm learning to cope with the emotionless mediocrity of day-to-day living.
That's cool. That's really cool. Yeah, my notes on that song, just it's just a really, really sweet song.
I really loved how simple it was. It was kind of simple lyrically, simple, had a very simple arrangement, but it really did a lot with it.
Mm-hmm. Were you familiar with any of the originals before you heard this album, Tom, or did this album and this, so you, this prompted you to go and seek out the originals?
No, it really was a situation. I think my girlfriend at the time, Barb, introduced me to the album when it came out, and I started listening to it. And then it was Kevin at Half Price Books who was like, well, you know, those are covers, even though it's called Songs of Daniel Johnston. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I guess he wrote these for her. Like, I knew who he was because he was famous in Austin, but I didn't realize, like, no, those are his songs. And of course, then I went and I got the albums because we had a reused record section at the bookstore. So I dug up the albums that somebody had sold back and started listening to it. And I was like, this is a whole other universe of music here.
So cool. A lot of one of the notes I wrote down here was a lot of monkey references. Yeah. Like, obviously, there's the album, there's the song, Like a Monkey in a Zoo.
And it could happen to you. You could be in my place. No, it wasn't always like this. Oh, but I never saw it coming. I'm so alone.
But there's three or four songs Monkey Tips has had, I think, is mentioned in I Had a Dream, more monkey references in Sorry Entertainer. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if he saw himself sometimes as a trained monkey, you know, that
in a zoo.
In a zoo. Right. Exactly. Basically, people ordering him to dance and perform and it just came through in so many references in his songs.
Yeah. And monkey references are not a bad thing in my estimation.
Yeah, for sure. you can never go wrong with monkey references.
What struck me about this album is it has 22 songs on it, but it still clocks in at less than an hour, which is for me in the world I listen to, the music I listen to, that's jaw dropping. That's like three albums worth of music. If you know, bands I listen to churned out 22 songs.
And when you look at it, it's like Desperate Man Blues is 4:19. Mm-hmm. Rocket Ship is 4:11. I mean, they're not all tiny songs.
No.
But there's enough minute 47s and stuff that the average, you know, keeps it under an hour.
Yeah, when Rocket Ship is the epic, then it's a
And speaking of Rocket Ship, I think there has to be a Coverville Countdown where I had you on as a guest, Tom, and you had me play that because.
Oh, really?
Hearing that, it was not the first time I'd heard that. And I didn't look to see if I actually had it in my library, but I feel like it's something that that I've played before, either as a request or as something.
Or like the Thanksgiving show, maybe.
That's what I'm thinking, right? The Coverthon. As soon as I heard that, I'm like, wait a minute, I know this. And it's not just because there was a version on the Dead Milkmen show a few weeks ago. It just felt like it was such a recent thing. Actually, here we go. I can probably look and see the date.
It would be the kind of song I probably would have tried to think, you know, when I was thinking of covers to suggest it would be, I would have thought of this.
Looks like it was. Yeah, looks like it was added to my library in November of 2013, and so that has to be has to be one that you had suggested to me, and we played on a Coverville Countdown. That's awesome. Fantastic.
That was my first Coverthon.
Oh, no kidding.
It was 2013.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember which one was my first. 20? How many years have I been doing it? We got only maybe a year or two before that.
Craig Kilborn did it for a few years before you took over, right?
That's right. Exactly. And I changed up a couple things, kept the five questions and got rid of the moment of Zen. All right. You mentioned Living Life. What are some of the other songs, standout tracks? I know it's going to be hard because
it really is tough when I love everyone. So Living Life obviously is the one that's the most durable, but you know, Walking the Cow is catchy.
It really is. Yeah. It's a great beginning to the album. And this was the first song that I went back and listened to the original of. And, I can't tell how old Daniel is in the recording. His recorded version of that, but he sounds like he's, you know, 14 recording on a little Casio,
a chord organ.
Okay. What is a chord organ, by the way?
Kind of a home organ that has a single short keyboard and a set of chord buttons, enabling the musician to play a melody or lead with one hand.
Oh, look at that. Okay. Wow. It looks like it's part keyboard, part Casio, part Nintendo game controller. That's really cool. Wow. Okay. And originally you said that I was thinking C-O-R-D. No, it's C-H-O-R-D. Duh, of course. Because it's chords. It's like, well, don't all organs have chords? Is that what separates
not all of an organ
from a piano?
Unlike the cordless organs. Yeah.
Right, well, that's a piano is a cordless organ. Get your mind out of the gutter, Hammond. Yeah, I'm sorry. So I jumped in when you were talking about Walking the Cow. What other ones?
Oh, I Had a Dream is another one that I always sing along with. Because, you know, it's just such a weird magical world that he creates.
You were the queen of quite a few.
And Kathy brings to life the sort of thing where, you know, I pulled out the casket and crawled in. Yes, I did. It's just, I don't know what it, I can't even explain it, but there's just something that's like, oh man, yeah, no, I'm right there with you suddenly.
It's got such a fascinating chord change, chord progression and tempo change around what I would call the closest thing to a chorus in that song. It's a really cool and unexpected turn that it takes, and I really like that.
Yeah, the way the vocal line plays against the melody and the instrumentation is really quite unique.
And just the way it surprises you with the lyrics too. So, you know, while all of that musicality is going on, it does things that you're like, oh, I know what he's going to say next. No, I don't.
Mm-hmm. No, or even what note he's going to sing in next, or what she's going to sing in next. No, not at all.
Running Water is one that I want to point out particularly because it's one of those things where I sang along with it and I could tell there were other people alongside, and I found out later that the Dog and Duck Pub, which I used to frequent quite often, was where it was recorded.
And you never change, no matter what you do, you always wind up the same. Never knowing where you go, always running, never stopping to see where you're at, never looking back, nothing.
And many of the people I hung out with at the Dog and Duck were like, oh yeah, I'm on that track. Because now they may have been telling me lies. I don't have independent confirmation for this, but the story that goes from the people I used to hang out with is she was recording this in the bathroom at the Dog and Duck and just invited whoever was there at the time to come in with her and sing it along with her.
It feels like a very Daniel Johnston thing to do, right? Like a very DIY kind of way to record the cover.
Yeah.
And so the Running Water we're hearing is the sink going.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She just turned on the tap. Yeah.
I love it. And the reverb is great in there. The acoustics.
That's the Dog and Duck. May it rest its soul. It's no longer with us. The Dog and Duck bathroom. Forever recorded for posterity. Posterity. For posterity, too, probably.
I love the Beatles. I wrote down the Beatles references Hey Joe. Each verse kind of pays tribute to a different Beatles song. Hey Jude in the first one, Get Back in the second one, We Can Work It Out in the third one. It's a really clever way of doing a very kind of secretive tribute without it being overt and blatant. I really, really like that.
There's the off-kilterness of Sorry Entertainer, which I felt like was the most overt attempt of Kathy to imitate Daniel's style, but without appearing to mock or copy.
Right.
She's making it atonal in a way that he didn't do it the same way on his version. But it really captures that sort of off-kilter personality that he had.
Yeah. This is the song that I'm keeping from this album on a playlist for my car.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? Sorry, Entertainer?
Yeah.
Sorry, Entertainer.
I was really impressed.
It seems like the most personal song out of all these.
I was really impressed with how rockin' she made West Virginia.
Oh, that is a song that's always stuck in my head, too. Anytime someone brings up West Virginia for whatever reason, that song pops into my head. The Naive.
And that was one I didn't listen to the original on. Naive. So how is the original compared to,
this one's pretty close. She just has a smoother singing voice, basically, as far as I can remember anyway.
Yeah. There are times that she reminds me a little bit of like Natalie Merchant. Trying to think of who else. There was another singer.
You mean Natalie Merchant reminds you of Kathy McCartney?
Right. I'm looking to see what other notes I have here. Museum of Love and Rocket Ship were my favorites. Those are the two I'm pulling into a kind of a permanent rotation.
Rocket Ship is just, I didn't mention it again because we talk so much about it, but it's just a great song. And it's probably the hit I would guess off of this album. If you wanted to introduce someone to the whole album, you'd play him that one first.
It would be a gateway to get them into the album, because it is, and this would be the one that I would say, all right, take your They Might Be Giants fans, first play them Rocket Ship and then get them into the rest of it, because Rocket Ship does feel like the kind of the TMBG connection. Sorry Entertainer, Monkey references, covered that. I honestly thought we'd be mentioning the word eclectic more. Some other influences that I had in here, just in song style and arrangement, the Pixies, maybe a little Frank Zappa, but not as bizarre and eclectic.
Yeah, it's not as atonal as Zappa it was.
For sure. Yeah.
Zappa was Zappa was inventing his own scales, let alone. Mm-hmm,
And I think that's because, and again, I'm speaking out of school here. I don't know if that's what Kathy McCarty was up. I've met her like twice. So I don't really know her, but I feel like what she was trying to do was make Daniel's music more accessible. And so she would want to go the opposite direction from the atonality.
Interesting. So tell us about meeting her. Was it seeing her in concert and then talking to her afterwards?
No, man, it was Austin in the 90s. It was, I'm sitting at a table at a bar and she comes and plops down and says hi to Greg Johnson from Spoon. And I'm like, oh, this is my friend Kathy. Oh, hey, how's it going? Nice to meet you. I'm Tom. Like, there's that kind of thing.
That's even better. Well, that's totally awesome.
Yeah. And I have no idea what we talked about because it was probably whatever weather was happening that day or whatever, you know,
but it wasn't the, wasn't this music. It wasn't,
No. Yeah. It was, I was like, oh, I probably said, you know, like, oh, I really love Dead Dog's Eyeball. Oh, thanks. You know, what do you do? I work at Half Price Books. Oh, that's cool. I bought a book there once. You know,
right. Like it might have been the impetus for the conversation, but it wasn't where it stood. That's so cool. Anything else that you want people to know about? Because obviously what we want them to do afterwards is go check this album out on Spotify or Apple Music or wherever after hearing this show. Is there anything else you want them to kind of look for and listen for as they're checking this out?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question because I love it because of where my head was at in 95. Crossed over where Kathy McCarty and Daniel Johnston's heads were at in, you know, prior to 1995. But I still think this album uniquely out of a lot of the music that I listened to back then holds up. And I was very snotty in 95. I refused to listen to the radio. I generally only wanted to listen to local bands that I could actually go see. And yet, this is a very accessible, fun album. I think maybe the reason I haven't used the word eclectic is I don't consider it eclectic. The lyrics are pretty eclectic. Some of the approaches and some of the songs are experimental, but it's not an experimental album. It's a very listenable, enjoyable album. And I love that it's showing off the best part of Daniel's compositions by a very competent also musician in Kathy. And so I'd say, like, if you just want to have a fun listen, if you want to have something that's pleasant and enjoyable, but not shallow. So, you know, maybe where Taylor Swift meets Dead Milkman, right? maybe this is it.
Well, I thought it was came across as playful, as less eclectic. I thought it was just kind of
that's a great
fun,
word.
Playful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very cool. No, I'm very grateful that you suggested this one. This is,
man, you don't know how happy that makes me because this is just a personal fave of mine. I don't hear that many people talk about it. You know, it was Bar None Records back in the day, so it had a little bit of success, but it's not something I hear on Hollywood movie soundtracks or
sure.
You know?
Well, you only hear like three things on Hollywood movie soundtracks anymore. Right. It's the aforementioned Taylor Swift and Adele. And yeah, exactly. This is this is definitely something that, like you said, I'm grateful that you brought to my attention and is something that I'm keeping in playlist. Like this is an album I'm picking up and enjoying. I'm not done listening to it when we're done recording the show, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I'm very happy to hear that.
Do you, what kind of, feedback do you get from friends? If you've done this, if you've tried to introduce this to other friends and say, hey, there's an album I want you to check out. Do you get,
I haven't done that with this album or with any album, in a long time. I'm usually taking the recommendations. Uh-huh. Because my wife has much better musical taste than I do. She keeps up on new things. And so I listen. And then, you know, I have that weird playlist I was mentioning earlier where it's just a mishmash, you know, of everything from The Summer Wind to, you know, Living Life by Kathy McCarty. And so usually what I get from people, like one time Patrick Beja was driving with me from BlizzCon and he's like, is this the radio? I'm like, no, this is my playlist. He's like, oh, that makes more sense.
On a more specific note, have you introduced the album to Eileen and what's her take on it?
I know I played it for her when we first started dating, like way back 17 years ago, 18, right. Wow. A long time ago. And she liked
still
it.
Still together.
Yeah. And I think she may have heard of it. It was like, oh yeah, no, I've heard of this. So, and she liked it. But, beyond that, I don't remember anything else about doing.
You've never walked into a room and heard her playing this, like heard her listening to this while she's doing work or anything.
No, but she also, that's not kind of, she kind of constructs playlists on Spotify and usually of current things. She likes to listen to a lot of current stuff. So
very good. Well, awesome. Well, Tom, this has been fantastic. This is exactly what we want the show to be. So thank you so much for filling in all of the right checkboxes and making this exactly what we intended.
I'm glad. I almost recommended one of the Wannabes albums, which are harder to find because they never went national on their distribution. Or I could have gotten even weirder and recommended Cattle Guard or the Dung Beetles. Neither one of them, which ever got distribution. Cattle Guard was just my friend's punk band, which I thought was really good. And the Dung Beetles was inspired by the Neil Diamond cover bands to do covers of Beatles songs that replaced the lyrics to be about feces.
So you're saying there's a second cover album now that you're going to introduce me to that I was.
True.
Well, there's a group called Sergeant Hetfield's Motor Breath Pub Band.
Now that one I know.
Yeah, and they do Beatles-esque songs in the style of Metallica.
I kept trying to talk the Dung Beetles guys into, because they also had a Neil Diamond cover band at the time. I was like, you need to do the Tex Pistols and just cover Sex Pistols songs as country songs.
Oh, that's awesome. That's totally awesome. I love stuff like that. I love, the Big Daddy type stuff, the Frank Bennett, who does the kind of the Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, crooner style versions of stuff like that. I think there is a mastery to doing those kinds of combinations and being true to both the original and the genre that you're doing the new song in. I love it.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you can get the Dung Beetles out there. Probably, you know, have to dig around, but it was reviewed in the Austin Chronicle, or at least their album Ass Masters Volume 1 was.
Okay. I've already got a link on YouTube.
On Crapital Records.
It was really fantastic. Buck's Best Beatles Tribute Band. I'm looking at it right now. The Dung Beetles. Love it. Fantastic. Well, Tom, thank you so much for being here. Hey, in case there's, like four people in our audience who don't know where they can find more Tom, where can they find more Tom?
The best way to explore the universe of the podcast I do is at tommerritt.com, TOMMERRITT, where you can find things like Daily Tech News Show or Cord Killers or Current Geek, Sword and Laser, and more.
Fantastic. Well, great to have you, and save some of those recommendations because maybe we'll have you back in the future to really deep dive into those things.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'll stay away from any Wannabes music, with the exception of that song by the Spice Girls, until then, just so I keep myself fresh for what you might recommend. How's that? Gotcha.
Sounds good.
All right. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain and Tom Merritt, this is Brian Abbott saying thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
Is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.